just to have another male figure play with their kids and like the importance of rough and tumble play.
Yeah.
Like if you go back into like development of children, these boys are missing that so much.
All right, guys, welcome to the podcast. Unfortunately today, Mike is out. So you're stuck with me, Amy, and Kelsey. I hope that's okay.
Hey, y'all.
Oh, Kelsey, you're not even saying hey? You're really staying on mute? Okay.
I couldn't unmute myself in time.
So today we're going to go into an interview that Mike did with Casey Wright. She is a former Olympic level gymnast coach turned entrepreneur who took her parents' cartwheel shop, in quotes, and turned it into an internationally known licensing and curriculum development company, as well as 5 area corporate stores. So listen in, and then we'll catch you on the other side.
So, you know, when we first met at that EO event, you said something that hit me like a ton of bricks. You're like, oh, I started this ninja thing. Like, and in retrospect, it's so obvious what you did, yet no one was doing it or seems to even still be doing it. How did it come about?
I started looking at my business as a business. And I think that was the main thing that a lot of people weren't doing. They will be now, you know, with the world as it is. But, I started looking at it as a business and how do I serve more people? And it was like, hey, 95% of my gym is girls and boys gymnastics isn't really, you know, doing so hot these days. So how can we just do something fun that'll rebrand and remarket a gymnastics-like program for boys? And I was really just sitting on the bleachers with some other moms watching my daughter take class and my son was in a little pumpkin seat. And one of the moms said, man, my son would love this and my husband would never go for it. And it's kind of true. It just didn't have a, you know, so we started out with a class and then it became a program and now it's a sport and it's in, you know, it's all over the world.
So Ninja Zone's the business, but how come dads don't want their sons doing gymnastics?
I definitely wouldn't say all. But I think in general, I have a son, right? Who that little guy in a pumpkin seat, he's now 8 and I want him to be a part of a team and I want him to make friends. And there weren't a lot of programs and they were seeming to become less and less and less. So, you know, you can take gymnastics. I don't know. They wear a leotard or whatever, and it doesn't seem as like cool as like football or whatever. Totally.
But that's what the dads are thinking, right?
That's, you know, I think, yeah. I mean, ninja is definitely pretty cool, right? Like,
yeah. Well, tell me if this is your assessment. I'm thinking dads like I'm growing a boy. I'm not raising a girl here, and that's a girl's sport, right?
Yeah. And even the boys, they think that because that's what girls do, right? Girls do gymnastics and dance. We play soccer. We play baseball. You know, we play football. We play basketball. But we can also be ninjas. And it's really cool because they're the ones that love it even more because it's edgy, right? It's a little scary. It's a little challenging. They're jumping and climbing and flipping. And it's like inherent to human nature to do everything. It's just like, you know, it's obstacle course racing now, the Tough Mudders and the, you know, Spartan races, and it's all of that combined. It's very testosterone driven, you know?
Totally. So what's your mix of boys and girls participating in Ninja Zone?
Oh, it's like 90-10. So we started it out for a boys program and then really I got hit with a lot of, well, you know, the girls want to do it. Why wouldn't you let the girls do it? And in all honesty, girls are at that age tend to be like really good little listeners. They follow directions and the boys would get in trouble if girls are in their classes and it breaks down their confidence. And I could go on for days on the on confidence in kids. And we just felt that if we separated them, it was better because the girls would kind of become the gold standard. So anyway, we separated them. It worked. And then when we started the girls program, they do it for a little while, but it's very similar to gymnastics. And so it's mainly boys, but
yeah, so it's 90% boys, 10% mm-hmm. girls.
Yeah.
What are the fathers acting like now? And the bleachers are like, yeah, go boy. I mean, it just feels like it's so testosterone generated.
It's fun. We have the Ninja Games. It's the competitive format. They get scored on like flipping and speed. So it's just like a video game, literally. Yeah. I mean, it was the whole vision of the games is Mario goes through the course, jumping, climbing, you know, jumping up and down, and then go fight Bowser, jump, turn, kick, flip off the wall. I mean, it's a video game in real life.
Well, if you don't mind sharing, I'm just curious as the impact on your business on revenue, maybe profitability percentages, like before and after the Ninja Zone, like what was it before you started, the day before, and what's it like today?
Double. And not only, well, here's, I have multiple locations. So the facility that it started in was a new facility and it had space to grow because we had just, we just opened and it was 50-50 gymnastics and ninja. So 50%. Each. And then, I opened up a new facility, same thing. And then what's cool about it is because you can have, you know, the brothers of the sisters and the sisters of the brothers, it just makes sense that it's kind of a one-stop shop for all things like flipping and movement and coordination. So, it's been pretty great. And all of our licensees, they've done well. Many of them have taken down new space and, you know, started just because it's the other half of the population. Right. So,
totally. So you've doubled your business. You are a licensor. Mm-hmm. How many licensees do you have?
I think it's like 350.
Okay. So this is a sizable operation. Have any of the boys, how long have you had the Ninja Zone now?
So we started it inside the gyms in 2014, launched through an email campaign in 2015, and that was nationally. And so about that long.
So we're a solid 5 years into it right now. Mm-hmm. And have you seen any of these boys progress to say, I actually have a love for gymnastics? Have any of the boys converted from ninja into the gymnastic program?
We've seen that in many of our licensees. We wanted to be the foundation, right? For them, if they wanted to go into gymnastics or parkour or even martial arts, I mean, it's really just a coordination foundation for anything. Go play basketball. For us, we focus on foundational athleticism and character development so that they can do anything because, I mean, that's a much bigger impact on the world than just, you know, building obstacle course and trickers, right?
Yeah. And you have, do you have a lot of competitors that sprung up since you came up with this idea?
Yeah. Yes, several. And then a lot of people are doing their own programs as well. Just, we call them the DIYs. They'll kind of copycat and make their own thing. And I mean, it's great because it's, is all it? Ships rise with the high tide.
Okay. It is. But do you really feel it's great or does that piss you off?
No. I like in my heart of hearts, it's 100% great because our competition is the couch, number one.
Yeah. Okay.
And two, other sports where they're sitting on a sideline.
Yeah. But, so here's my impression. When I met you, I was like, all right, here's a very smart entrepreneur, really competitive yourself. And you didn't come across that way. Actually, you're very affable, very approachable. I was like, Casey's got some don't F with me kind of drive to you. At least that's my sense. If that's true, it's kind of shocking for me to hear it's okay if people copy me.
I'm more of a PR kind of competitor. I'm really, really competitive with myself, with the challenges that I have.
PR is a personal record.
Yeah.
Like, gotcha.
Oh yeah. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, that's a very gymnastic type thing to say.
Yeah. I got a Peloton about a month ago and I'm like, oh, did you really? I want a new PR.
How do you like the Peloton? Is it worth the investment?
I'm having a blast and I didn't even like spin. I'm having a blast on
What did that cost you?
Uh, Don't ask me that. I don't like.
Why? Are they like $2,000? I think.
No, right? I think so. I can't remember. That's why I said I don't.
Oh, we can't remember. But it's a monthly subscription, also.
Yes, but you can do all the apps. I use okay. it. I've really.
You think it's worth?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I have a stationary bike at home, but a stationary nothing bike, and I'm like, after about 30 minutes listening to another podcast, I'm like, I can't stay focused. Like, there's no drive to do
totally
more.
Totally different. Yeah. It's totally different. And the same thing. I've never run with audio outside and
oh, you're
run
a runner?
With a coach. I mean, whatever I can do, I got to change it up. But yes, the coach, I've never run with a coach in my ear telling me every 2 minutes to do something different. I didn't even think that was possible. And it makes it just fly by. I'm doing like, you know, 45 minute runs outside where normally I'd be like, again, kind of toast.
Yeah. What's that? The Peloton app does that too?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Cause I run regularly. And I have an iWatch here. Yeah. I didn't know there was a pace setting for running, mm-hmm. and I plugged in the pace setting, and I've been running about an 8:30 mile, and I set the pace setting to 8:15. I started running a 7:55 mile because I was so afraid of getting the buzz of below pace. Just that little tweak, and that's over 4 miles. For me, that's a good distance. I don't like to run super long. For 4 miles, 7:55 because of that. Yeah. Does Peloton do this similar thing?
They do. They even do like training programs, marathon and whatever. Huh. Half, you know. Yeah. And I just got it. It's fun. It's fun.
Do you do metrics like that for your Ninja Zone? Like, do the kids see improvements? How do you track that?
Yeah. We have little progress charts, and we really try to focus in on the effort, not the result. It's something our wheelhouse is, let's say 4 to 9 year olds.
Okay.
So they don't, and that's where a lot of times parents, when they get involved too soon and you put kids in competition too soon, kids don't understand the scoreboard.
Right.
And so we really try to, you know, growth mindset, focus on the effort, not the results. So did you try something new today? Did you let something scare you a little bit today? Did you, you know, help a fellow ninja? Like it's much more mindset driven, but they do have their little progress charts. And then the Ninja Games has a whole scoring component with it.
Oh, so. I want to talk about that, but I gotta ask you this first. So my son played lacrosse, soccer, and you hear the parents screaming at their 5-year-old, kick the ball, you know, whatever. And shame on us parents, right? Cause I'm one of them. I'm not a screamer. That sport, I know the rough general rules. Everyone knows the rough rules. And because it's such an established sport, I want my kid to be a great player. Ninja Zone, I wouldn't even know what to compare it to. Do you have that same parents yelling from the sideline, you can do better? Or because it's not an established sport in a traditional sense, are actually people more giving more leniency to their kids?
I definitely think we have a lot of the kids that are really wanting to do more individual sports. And if you think of boys in general, the team sports are difficult. First of all, anything that they join, you have a bunch of volunteer coaches that haven't been trained. You've got kids standing in lines. If you watch, you know, baby soccer, they're running around in clumps. There's no real like teaching of a lot of things at those young ages. And so I think parents are looking for something that their kids really love to do. And not to mention, they want them to play. And I know like at least where we are and where we live, like it's hard, it's many of our high schools, it's really hard to make a varsity team unless you've been like single sport since the time you were 4. And then the kids burn out because I coached like Olympic level gymnastics for a long time and they burn out. And so let's find something that they can play and that they can do that they're not going to burn out, that builds the same skills that allows them to go try any other sport and be super confident in their body from a coordination perspective. And that's something that a lot of people don't think about. Like there's people feel stupid going in to take a yoga class because they don't understand how to accept like auditory cues from a coach and like body positions and, just muscle memory. Like there's so much, like I think it's as important as swimming to fitness in your adult life, like understanding full body coordination, because you need that to have the confidence to stay fit and pick up new things.
I want to ask you a question, but I want to give you context to the question. Okay. So I ask the question, but don't answer just yet. So do you have an advantage being a female entrepreneur in this space? Here's the context. I have a friend, his name's Larry, a very successful entrepreneur. I'm doing air quotes because while he's been very financially successful, his dream actually was to be a kindergarten teacher. He says, I just love to work with kids. He said, but he goes, I can never do it. I said, why not? He's like, because I'm a male. He goes, there's an instant judgment that I'm a molester or something like that. He's like, I just like to work with young kids because I would never pursue that just for the risk I put myself at. Do you think because you're a female in this space that it actually gives you an advantage in that regard, perception?
Well, I don't teach myself, and I will say that the success that we're having right now are our male coaches.
Interesting.
Like 99% of the time, the moms, typically the moms are the ones bringing the kids, not all the time, but let's give it 70%.
Okay.
Just to have another male figure play with their kids and like the importance of rough and tumble play.
Yeah.
If you go back into like development of children, these boys are missing that so much. So when I hear that people, my father was an elementary school teacher, and gosh, we're missing that. And I think that a few bad apples have really, they've really put a damper on that, but I definitely don't let it hinder the people I hire. I haven't, yeah. I've never actually coached a ninja class.
But, oh, interesting.
No,
but your activities are in a public open space. The parent can watch the entire time, right?
Yep.
So they're not in a classroom closed door.
Yep.
Did your father ever experience that bias or is,
No, my dad actually did not, but we are definitely connected in a space where it's not as much the bias as it is the, there's some bad people, you know, there's bad people. But my dad was, I don't know, that was his full-time career. He was a gymnastics, he was a elementary school teacher and then a gymnastics coach.
Okay. So, I want to ask you a really difficult question. When we were doing the pre-interview, you know, one question I just wanted to get, what formed you? And you came back with a response I never expected, about your husband.
Oh.
Yeah. So what happened?
So, well, really that was the catalyst that taught me how to be a business owner. Because I had to. And I think a lot of times it takes life totally smacking you in the face for you to make the necessary changes, right? We need to make. And basically I had two facilities. I bought my parents' business. They were out of it. I was fairly young and I'd done everything on my own. I got married.
How old were you?
Quickly, just 28 when I got married. So I've worked in the business my whole life. I took it over when I was 21.
And this is a gymnastics business the entire time, right?
Gymnastic business, single gymnastics operation. Took it over when I was 21 and then bought it when I was 25, got married when I was 28, had, got, or 29, had my daughter a year later. And then, and my husband at the time, became the manager for a second facility that we opened. So he was the office manager. But I ran everything. I was still in the gym coaching full time. I didn't even have program directors. There were no systems, it wasn't even a business. It was just what I did. I never called myself a business owner at all. And, I became pregnant with my son and he started to, he left and I didn't know why. He left and he was gone. And, I knew at that time what real panic was, right? Like I used to kind of joke at, oh, you have anxiety? What's that? You know, until I've got a baby and I'm pregnant and no husband and no manager and, had my first panic attack. I was driving and I do have to, like, it's sometimes we create pathways in our brain. So, So even when I talk about it, I kind of,
you're feeling it.
I have to, breathe deep. I couldn't breathe and I had no idea what it was. I tried calling my mom, my dad, I finally get a hold of an aunt that I talk to twice a year. And she's like, you're having an anxiety, you're having a panic attack.
You're literally in the car.
I was in the car
with your daughter.
I was pregnant and my daughter was in the back and I'm like, I just had to pull over because I couldn't breathe because it was all, you know, all the stuff was just coming up to my head. And, so anyway, it was at that point, when he was gone, later to find out he was just slipping into a deep depression that I had no idea. And, I knew that I had to give up something to someone. And that was when I hired my first manager. And it was just somebody to manage the second location. I had no idea of my numbers. To me, in my head, I thought of this big salary and how I would never be able to pay for that. And the fact of the matter is I just never really looked at my books. I was in my business. I was never on it. And it was at that point that I opened this door to this hallway with all of these other doors, because once she took that off my plate, let's more. And then as my personal life got a little bit crazier, and he was gone and I was, you know, pregnant and then a newborn, and I was actually.
So you had, I'm sorry, but you had a newborn. Your husband was gone. You had a newborn, and you're running a business as a single mom now.
I had two facilities, and the lesson is that you can't wait until life smacks you in the face to do the things that you need. That you need to do to make a change in the quality of your life. So,
you know, a lot of people would say that's strong. You know, it sounds very strong. Is that the word you'd use for navigating that?
I mean, I'm definitely strong and I've always been, but I think that we have a tendency to be one of two people. When we get under stress, we either overreact or underreact. And I've always been an overreactor, which has caused me plenty of pain in itself, but
I feel you.
Which is why I've got all kinds of like weeds growing everywhere, but it gave me something to do and to channel my focus. And I knew I had to then, you know, focus on taking care of these kids. And that's really where the birth of Ninja Zone came out, because it was only a year after my son was born that we started Ninja. Because I actually opened a third location. And the reason why I opened the third location was because in the second location, I hired a manager and I'm like, life's easy.
Yeah.
Because I've always done everything.
So when you said your son was in pumpkin seed, he was 1 year old and that's when the idea came. So that's five, 6 years ago now.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. So I guess maybe my timeline's a little off. Maybe he was a year and a half.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, whatever. Yeah. Yeah. But roughly
14.
So he's doing the Ninja Zone stuff now?
Yeah.
And you brought a manager on. It was easy. Did it continue to be easy as you brought on new managers?
It was really cool for a while. We did the third location and then I did a fourth location. And at the same time as the fourth location, that's when we did Ninja Zone nationally. So in 2015, I then remarried and did the fourth location, and that was a lot. And I heard somebody say once, every time your business triples, it's a different business.
Oh,
and that's what happened. That's definitely what happened. And it's really just a change in what you do in your daily schedule, right? It's like it goes down to what you do with your minutes and the different decisions that you're making on a day-to-day basis. Are you deciding
I've actually never heard that every time it triples. So what would be the first point? I guess the 250, 300 in my experience in revenue is where that's the day I can't do everything anymore. I got to meet that first hire. Triple that would be about $1 million, 750 to a million. I guess that's where I got to start managing the business as opposed to working in the business. Mm-hmm. 3 million for me was the introduction of systems and actually tiered management. Like I could no longer manage the managers. They had to manage other people. Mm-hmm. And I never had a $10 million business. What would you say the tiers are, and how did it change for you and your role?
Well, funny thing, I wish I would know what my numbers were, but that's what.
Maybe that's a good thing.
Well, I really just focused on my bank account. Like gross always seemed like a vanity metric to me, and it didn't make much sense. So I just focused on what was in my bank account and made sure I'd pay the bills. And honestly, every time I grew, I was actually growing for people in my company. Like I was growing for my employees. So like I had a manager that I didn't want her to quit. So I opened up a new place so that I knew if I opened up a new place, I could afford her.
So okay, I love that. So tell me about the levels. Maybe it's not pinned to a number, but how did your role change? What were the significant changes in your roles?
This what you just said in terms of systems, that's exactly how it happened. But for me, it wasn't necessarily a revenue number. It was what I had to do with what I had to do with my brain and what my decisions became. So was I teaching flips and twists? You know, that was the first level. Yeah. And then obviously hiring people. And to me, it's hiring decision makers. That's those were the levels that when you hire someone that hires somebody else, that's a pretty big step. Right. So
how do you hire decision makers?
I think it's the same way you hire anybody else. You just have to really understand the personality and the role that's required. And I say this like I'm an expert at it when I'm like trying to get it. I mean, I'm trying to still figure it out every day. We're trying to like really try to prioritize like Pareto principle, those key personality characteristics that are working for that specific role. So we're doing it right now. And we learned a lot through COVID on what that person really should be. And right now our number one, because we are looking to expand is work ethic. I mean, really work ethic. Like, and for us, it's a number three on the Enneagram. They've got to be that person that loves it.
So does work ethic mean hours or output?
It means that there's just a certain personality that identifies with being a grinder.
Gotcha. Does a grinder mean do what it takes?
Yeah.
How many employees do you have now?
Well, now or 3 months ago? let's see.
Okay, what was 3 months ago?
When's this going to air? Let's see. We were about 150, mostly part-time though, I would say. Mostly part-time, 150, 165. Oh gosh, I can't. And then, we're down significantly now because we're not really open.
Gatherings, right?
Right.
Yeah, so how's your facilities? That must have. How have you adjusted? Can you adjust?
We adjusted. We went virtual. We created a platform to do the Zoom classes and actually learned a whole lot, got really efficient. As the way I explained it to all of our coaches is we can no longer wear Lululemon pants. We need to go back to Target pants, and you know, the pockets might not feel so nice and whatever. We went virtual and learned a lot, got really lean, got really efficient, cut some fat, found some, it was interesting. I mean, it kind of filtered itself out. And then, now we're basically getting to fix a lot of things that needed to be fixed in the first place. And, hopefully get back in there. So.
You're in a, I assume you're in a EO forum, effectively an entrepreneur mm-hmm. support group. Mm-hmm. Does that help you navigate situations like this?
Yeah. I mean, it's always good to get another perspective. I love to hear, you know, the other industries, how they're doing it. And what's really been good with my EO forum is I actually have some kind of secret shoppers in there to let me know how things are going.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, it was by happenstance, you know, their kids, and we live in the same area, and, you know, I've got places all over. So, you know, their kids are attending, but, EO has been amazing. And you just hear things that you would never think to ask the question. And then all of a sudden somebody's asking the question of their own business, and you're like, whoa, wait, I didn't even think about that. So
how do you recover from this COVID situation? How's your business change going forward, or does it?
Well, I will say that, we had a dream business, my dream facility. We were going to build this big complex with gymnastics and ninja. And I have a new idea for, a movement-based preschool and, special needs, and just super excited. And I pulled the plug. I totally pulled the plug. But the crazy thing is I was sad for like, I don't know, a day. And then I realized, holy cow, like, I can't imagine having a half-built building right now. I mean, there's people out there with half-built buildings, and it's outside of my comfort zone in terms of certainty. And you asked me a question when we first met about, I think it was about one of your upcoming books about the disadvantage.
Yeah, disadvantage.
And then you're going to have plenty of stories for that now, right? So
yeah.
What I really realized is you have to focus on what you have 1,000% control over, and everything that you think you need to have. When something awful happens, you can only play with the tools that are in your belt right in front of you. And that's what you have 100% control over. So that's what we really did, is we said, what do we have? What is here right now? And ditch the crazy ideas and ditch the let's try this or do this. And I'm not saying don't be innovative, because we did that too with the virtual, but just really focusing on what I have 1,000% control over. And to me, that gives me peace of mind, and it seems to be working. So,
well, you said you pulled the plug. Was that building under construction already, or was?
I bought the land. We had the steel ordered, and we dropped out of the queue. But what's interesting is there's other opportunities presenting themselves, and who knows what's going to happen with commercial real estate, and you know. Buy land and wait, and that's fine.
Okay, so you still have the land. That's interesting. Yeah, that's one thing I observed about you. You know, we've talked maybe 4 or 5 times, and just you have this decisiveness that I must. This is what I got to do. Did that come out of the situation with your first husband? That one day you woke up and it was just you. Where'd you build this ability just to move forward and not look back? If that's the right.
I think it is. I mean, even as a kid, I think that my dad was an entrepreneur, and he was fly by the seat of his pants. The house was always on fire. Like something it was always an emergency. And so I think that when you live in that for long enough, you do not have time to gather all of the puzzle pieces to make a decision. And I just had this conversation with one of my employees. He's like, well, we need to know exactly what the vision is. And I'm like, that is all well and good. And I am all about that 6 months or a year ago. But right now, when there's so much uncertainty, if you're going on a camping trip and you're unpacking your tent and there's a bear coming at you, you gotta drop your backpack and run. And then, you know what? It's you might have to come back and clean up your mess a little bit. And it's not nice. And in a perfect world, it's not fun to come back and clean up your mess. But it's us who don't die in these times. We don't get eaten by the bear, because I have to be able to make decisions with 80% of the information or 50% of the information. because that time that you lose kills you.
I was talking with Don Miller. He's the author of a book called Story Brand. And he says, March 14th, we were playing chess still as business owners. He goes, March 15th, it became a tennis match. And he goes, we're now pretty much on the ping pong. It's going back and forth so fast. Similar to what you said. What's the future plan now? So you're going to start reopening facilities, or do you have to wait for a specific protocol by state? Like, how does that work?
We're in Indiana. So my facilities are in Indiana, but we have licensees all over. Right. So, you know, we're trying to help the licensees through many of them are doing virtual programming. So we're helping them with on-demand and live classes. And then our places are open. We opened at a smaller capacity June 1st, and we're basically just, doing what we can. And again, that also comes down to a decision of you can't please everybody. 'Cause we learned that real quick. We learned it on the close. We did a big survey, and dude, if I haven't learned anything, the world is 50-50 right now. And it doesn't matter what you're talking
half
about.
Half the world's going to hate you. Half is going to like, that's a miracle,
and
right?
You're going to be wrong no matter what you do. And you're going to be right no matter what you do. So we just really had to look and say, let's go with the truth that moves us forward.
Mm.
And so we're just going to go with that. And we have to be willing to turn people away if we don't feel like we can meet their expectations. And, you know, and we have kids in there, for gosh sakes. And I think for me, my integrity lies in truth. And I would feel terrible making a promise that I couldn't deliver on. We are not going to be perfect social distancing 5-year-olds. We'll try, but to me, I need to be truthful. And I also want to make sure that they have fun. Because if they don't have fun, the downside risk of them not coming back is a much bigger downside risk than a handful of people not signing up for camp. So,
yeah, well, that's totally smart. And I think that what I've learned of you, that's your style, is that this is the way we're going to march. This is the way we're going to go. And you do it with an absolute integrity.
Thanks.
So, Casey Wright, where can our listeners get more information about Ninja Zone and maybe yourself?
Sure. The ninjazone.com. You can find all of our locations there. So we have licensees in almost all 50 states and several other countries. And then, I have a podcast called The Sports Entrepreneur, which is on a temporary pause. Again, I had to focus on where I could really move a needle. And so, but there's some great content there as well. So
yeah. I have a strong feeling, you know, these recessions, Casey, come the strongest businesses. You're clearly on a much greater mission than, just a gymnastic facility or just helping boys. I mean, you're helping all different communities get back to like the basic of humanity, which is movement as opposed to non-movement. So thanks for what you're doing.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right. So we're back. We're going to dive into what we all learned from the interview. Who wants to start?
I can start, although I feel like you guys don't like it when I start all the time.
It's just true.
Just pick,
it is so damn true.
Pick one of like 6 answers.
Okay. I'll narrow it down, guys.
Okay.
So I will say in general, I just love her innovation with the intention to serve better. So I felt like the reason why she started the Ninja program was she felt like there were boys that could benefit from this, but they weren't, because there was, you know, an association or a stigma around the sport itself of gymnastics. So the way that she was able to still serve them and give them this like great character building ability and athleticism ability, because she just shifted the way it's perceived, so which smart. Is super amazing. Yeah. And I feel like she's doing that again with COVID, like just being intentional about how she serves, because it should be fun. You know, not necessarily it's going to be perfect, but she wants to make sure she's definitely giving the product or serving the way that she intends to.
Yeah. You go ahead, Jer. I always take second. It's not fair.
So, I mean, my basic takeaway was she touched on being truthful and honest to your clients about who you are and then what you can, but more importantly, can't provide. And she referenced the fact that if, you know, there was something that she couldn't provide to a client, that's like something that you should be completely honest with up front. And it kind of sets the tone for your relationship with the client and whether you're going to, you know, exceed their expectations or not.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah. I really also loved how she built out her business plan and how it came about, Kelsey, as you said, to fill this need for the boys. And she said something else too that had me reflecting for a while. Better to not wait for life to smack you in the face before you change the quality of things in your life. And I was
said
like,
the same thing.
Yeah. Oh gosh. Yeah. And being proactive, the benefit of being proactive and assessing where you're at. And then something too I had never heard. Every time your business triples, your business changes. Have you heard that, Kels?
No.
No, that was interesting to me. And something I had never thought about as, you know, for all you entrepreneurs out there, something to think about. It's going to change.
Yeah.
I wonder like how consistent that is for people if we polled people.
I'd be interested to hear more about that.
Yeah.
I almost feel like it changes sooner than that. Like, you know, at least in our business, I feel like in terms of staff and product development, it happens a lot sooner than triple the revenue.
They triple, yeah.
Yeah.
That's true, because there's different changes too that can change your business. So,
and think about the employees, like to start with 10, triple that. If you go to 30, I mean, just that change alone is pretty drastic. Yeah. And then 30 to 100.
Right.
You know?
Huge.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah, faux shizzle.
Cool, faux shizzle.
Do we have a game, Jer? Do we have
a game? We do. Oh, we do. Yay! So guess, all right, so now the new game we're going to play before we play the game is guess what the game is.
Oh, something about gymnastics.
Oh, very good.
Oh.
Yes, Olympic trivia.
Nice.
Awesome.
Yeah, so cool. This is a good one. This was actually really fascinating. I liked researching this. It takes a long time to research and get... Not
yeah, Joe, this is time
dead.
Intensive.
Yeah.
Work
yeah.
intensive.
But think of all the new knowledge you have. You're going to be a trivia champion.
I know. So then I'm really going to be like one of those.
Lisa's going to be so impressed with you.
Yeah. Every event. Well, that's interesting, but did you know that?
Like, shut up, Jeremy. Yeah. I don't care, Jeremy. Yeah,
I know. Okay. So what medal is an Olympic gold medal mostly made of?
Bronze.
Well, no, I'm going to give you.
I was like, well, I don't even know what my choices are. Kelsey knows.
Nickel, so, I don't know.
So the choice, well, these are the choices: nickel, copper, gold, or silver. You don't have to answer right now. We'll go through the questions and we'll come back to all of them. Yeah. Okay, second question. What is the Olympic motto? Man's reach exceeds his grasp. Dare to be great. Faster, higher, stronger, or refuse to lose? Let me know when you guys are all set for the next one.
Ready.
I'm ready.
Okay. I don't know if I'm going to pronounce this gentleman's name correctly. Hans Gunnar Lilienwall.
No.
Hans Gunnar Lilienwall. I think that's it.
So might be cool.
Was the first Olympic athlete to be disqualified for drug use. Which drug did he consume? Was it marijuana, steroids, alcohol, or cocaine? All right, you guys all set for the answers?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Number one, what metal is an Olympic gold medal mostly made of?
I say nickel.
I say nickel too.
Okay. It's actually silver.
Really?
Yeah. And it's 92.5% silver, and then the rest is gold. And the last full gold medal was issued in 1912.
Those poor people.
Yeah.
They're getting gypped.
Yeah, they are. I wonder how much something like that would be worth.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay, so what is the Olympic motto? Do you just want to read which ones you guys picked?
I said faster, higher, stronger.
I said dare to be great.
Oh, Kelsey got it.
Really?
So it is in Latin. It's Sitius Altius Fortius, which means faster.
Nice.
Higher, stronger. Yeah. That's pretty cool.
Good job, Kels.
And then,
thank you. I'm very smart.
Yes,
you are.
Yes.
Was that a good guess? Yeah. Are you very smart? You're very smart.
And then the third one, Hans Gunnar Lijnvelmer, was the first Olympic athlete to be disqualified for drug use. Which drug did he consume?
I said cocaine. Cocaine.
Oh. Do we have a year on this?
Yes. I feel like if it's early on, it'd be cocaine, right?
It could be cocaine if it was early on.
I actually did not get the year on this. Sorry.
Mm-hmm. All right. I'm going with steroids just to be different.
Okay. It's actually alcohol. This is what's interesting. So he drank two beers to calm his nerves before the event, but the event that he was in was shooting involved. And so the entire team was disqualified. It was Swedish team.
Oh.
To be honest, though, if he was an alcoholic, it probably does steady his hand.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. They've done studies. You know, here's a little bit of knowledge. They've done studies on that, and they say that there's a certain level where it actually keeps you steadier.
Steadier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then after
then I
that,
guess
it's
cheating,
it's
right?
Negative. Yeah. I guess so. I mean. Hmm. That's kind of
very
cool.
Interesting.
Yeah,
very
interesting.
Cool.
Yeah, cool. You learn a little bit about the Olympics.
Yeah. Thanks, Cher.
Yeah, you got it. So, I guess that's it for the show. We'll wrap up. And do you have anything to add, Kelsey, about anything fun, subscribing, or anything like that? Or do you want me to do it?
Don't forget to subscribe at MikeMotorbike.com. We have new stuff all the time, so don't miss out.
Yeah, and if you guys find value in the podcast or the videos, please share with your friends. That's the best thing you can do so we can help build our channel and get the awareness out there for other entrepreneurs. And other than that, we will see you on the next episode.
Bye.
Bye. Cool.
See you later.
I've got a killer app for you. It's called Process Street. You know your business lives or dies by its processes. You've got to do it right, and you have to have the team following it consistently. We know that in-house, and that's why we implemented Process Street, and I encourage you to do the same. Process Street is the easiest way to manage your team's workflows and recurring processes. In fact, it even comes with pre-made templates for things like client onboarding, employee onboarding, sales processes, marketing processes, content publishing and promotion, customer support processes, you name it, the system has it. And now you'll have a consistent deliverable for your company. Do what we did and implement Process Street in your business. Plus, I got a deal for you. If you sign up now at our link, you get 20% off. So go to MikeMikalowicz.com/Process Street. That's MikeMikalowicz.com/Process Street. And if you're struggling spelling Mikalowicz, you're not alone. Go to MikeMotorbike.com/Process Street. And don't throw that superfluous slash at the end. That messes everything up. Go to MikeMotorbike.com/Process Street and get 20% off today.